Tuvyam.
Unto you.
Bhagavate.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Namaha.
Obeisances.
Translation. Dear Lord, you have no enemies or friends. Therefore, you are equal to everyone. You cannot be contaminated by sinful activities, and your transcendental form is always beyond the material creation. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead because you remain everywhere within all existence. You are consequently known as Vasudeva. We offer you our respectful obeisances. So you can repeat. Dear Lord, you have no enemies or friends.
Dear Lord, you have no enemies or friends.
Therefore, you are equal to everyone.
Therefore, you are equal to everyone.
You cannot be contaminated by sinful activities.
You cannot be contaminated by sinful activities.
And your transcendental form,
is
always beyond the material creation. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because you remain everywhere within all existence. You are consequently known as Vasudeva. We offer you our respectful obeisances. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Vasudeva because He lives everywhere. The word Vas means to live, as stated in Brahma Sanghita. Ekopyaso rachahitum jagadanda kotim. The Lord, through His plenary portion, enters into each and every universe to create the material manifestation. He also enters into each and every heart in all living entities, and into each and every atom also. Paramanu chayantarastam. Because the Supreme Lord lives everywhere, He is known as Vasudeva. Although He lives everywhere within the material world, He is not contaminated by the modes of nature. The Lord is therefore described in Ishopanishad as Apapavidam. He is never contaminated by the modes of material nature. When the Lord descends on this planet, He acts in many ways. He kills demons and performs acts not sanctioned by the Vedic principles. That is, acts considered sinful. Even though He acts in such a way, He is never contaminated by His action. He is therefore described here as Shuddha, meaning always free from contamination. The Lord is also Sama, equal to everyone. In this regard, He states in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, text 29, Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvisho sti na priyaha. The Lord has no one as His friend or enemy, and He is equal to everyone. The word satvaya indicates that the form of the Lord is not material. It is Satchidananda Vigraha, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. His body is different from our material bodies. One should not think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a material body like ours. So, Dhammasamaya Shudaya Purushaya Paraya Cha Vasudevaya Satvaya Tubhyam Bhagavate Namaha. Somaganati Mirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuran Miditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, first of all, we should understand where the principles that elaborate what is sinful and what is not sinful come from. And actually, they come from Krishna. Dharmam tu sakshad Bhagavat Pranitam. Dharma, of course, there's different types of dharma. Dharma is sometimes translated as the inherent quality of a thing, but in this particular context, it means duty or religious principles. So dharma comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It doesn't come from some theologians. In other words, the rules, let's give you an example. The rules of the government don't come from what I think is right or wrong. There's like I may be driving down the highway and speeding, but in my estimation, I'm not speeding. You know, I'm thinking, well, you know, 75, 85, 90, that's safe. but the government has its rule. So I can establish or attempt to establish any sort of principle or rule that I want, but it really doesn't hold any water. So when the police stop me and they say, hey, you were going 85 miles an hour, and then I say, well, I really feel, you know, I've established a rule that 85 miles an hour is appropriate on this highway. You know, that's my law. And the police will say, that's pretty foolish. Anyway, you're going to lose your license. And we're going to give you a... And because you said that, we want you to blow up this balloon, too. You know what that means? You know what blowing a balloon means? Yeah, I know you know what a balloon is, but why would the police have someone blow a balloon up?
Alcohol?
Alcohol, yeah. Because they take the balloon and they put it into a little device and it tells you what percentage of alcohol is in your blood. Because if you say something foolish like I established this rule of 85 miles an hour is appropriate in this highway, that indicates that you're either crazy or intoxicated, one of the two. So they will give you a drug test. You know, probably take you and give you a urine test, too. So the point is you can't really establish your own principles. The principles come from Krishna. And Krishna also establishes what principles are appropriate to what particular individuals. And the principles in the Manasamhita, for example, do not apply to Krishna, for example. They don't apply to Krishna. All right, that's the first point, why Krishna's acts are not considered sinful. I'm going to talk about why they might be considered sinful. But anyway, because they don't apply to Krishna. Another point is, whatever Krishna does, it's like, Prabhupada gives the example, it's like the sun. There may be some, Prabhupada used the example of urine, but Prabhupada said there may be some urine, and the sun shines on the urine, and it purifies it. You know, it has this ultraviolet light. Nowadays, of course, they use this artificial ultraviolet light to purify something. I don't know if any of you have seen these wands of ultraviolet, you know, ultraviolet bulb, and then they rub it over your bed or something to kill all the microbes in it. Or they may even insert it in water so that the microbes in India sometimes you do that, so the microbes are killed. So, therefore, Krishna is like the sun, Krishna Surya Sama. That, of course, is the famous statement that was on Bhagavad Gita, and it's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoya Andhakar. Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like the absence of sun, darkness. So Maya or illusion is the absence of sun. So basically, whatever Krishna does, because he's so pure, it purifies the activity. Like that. I mean, great souls, they can do things that lesser souls do. And the greater the soul gets, the more facility or the more prerogative they have to do things. I mean, for example, you have Lord Shiva. I mean, sometimes the followers of Lord Shiva are smoking the ganja. That's not Ganges. Ganja. Ganja, for those of you who don't know what it means the type of hemp that makes you intoxicated. There's certain types of hemp, and that's called Mary Jane. And for those of you who don't know what Mary Jane is, that's the fancy word for marijuana. Anyway, so that was in the 1960s they used that name. Would you like some Mary Jane? I think that is marijuana. So the followers of Lord Shiva, sometimes they, and I've given that example before when I'm in Govardhan, and I'm circumambulating the Shiva temple. Especially there's an interesting Shiva temple at the Chakaleshwara Mahadev temple, which is right. Chakaleshwara, that means, Chakaleshwara means the chakra, Sudhan chakra of Krishna that protects the Govardhan area that's dried up the water when Indra was trying to kill the residents of Vrindavan, and it was on top of Govardhan. So Chakaleshwara Mahadev, we circumambulate the temple there, and generally in back of the temple there's some sadhus who are smoking ganja. And they actually consider it to be Mahaprasadam. And just like we, I remember last night, everyone had these little pots of chip rice and different fruits and different things like that, and they were all going around offering it to everybody. So with the same sort of mood, these sadhus offered me ganja. You know, it was a nice, hospitable mood. They were very kind, hospitable, treating the guests properly. But they offered me ganja. So I came to the back of the temple, you know, circumambulating, and they said, oh, Maharaj, Mahaprasad. Not Mahaprasad of Govinde. Mahaprasad of Shivaya. Anyway, so I said, oh, it's a Kadashi, not a Kadashi. So anyway, I had an excuse not to take. So the followers of Lord Shiva, they do smoke ganja. You see this all the time in Braj, where they have not only ganja, but, you know, these big, big rolls of, you know, whatever else it is. And smoking, passing around between each other, and their eyes are red. And, of course, by taking intoxication, they're calling death very near, Prabhupada said. And also, they're going to have a destiny of being ghosts in the next life, which means they will get a chance to associate with Lord Shiva's ghost. But let's say, ostensibly, Lord Shiva takes ganja. I'm not saying he does. I mean, there's no evidence that I've read he does. But even if he does, getting back to the point, because he's a great personality, he can take anything and be unaffected. Just like that story, when there was the churning of the milk ocean, the demons and the demigods, they were churning the milk ocean, and they were using Vasuki, the serpent, to churn the milk ocean, because they had hoped to get some nectar, amrit, nectar of immortality. So they were churning, different things came out of the ocean. I mean, Lakshmi came out of the ocean, jewels came out of the ocean, and generally they either shared, or of course Lakshmi went with Lord Vishnu. So they were churning. Of course, the demons had sort of a little problem because they were churning, holding the head of Vasuki. And Vasuki, being a serpent, he had bad breath. In other words, poisonous breath. And he hadn't gargled that day. So, you know, so the demons were fainting. Because the demons were so proud, they thought we should touch the auspicious part of the serpent, which is the head, you know. Serpent in and of himself or itself is inauspicious, but I guess if you have to pick the most auspicious part of the serpent, it's the head. So the demons picked the head, the demigods picked the tail, but actually the demons didn't calculate that the head would be emitting all these poisonous fumes. So they were churning. The ocean of milk. And eventually, before they got the nectar, the poison came, Kalakuta. It's called Kalakuta poison. And this poison was actually killing everybody in the universe. So they didn't know what to do. The demons didn't know what to do about it. The demigods didn't know what to do about it. So went in trouble, called 911 Vishnu. So they called on their mobile phones, you know, Vishnu. They go 911. Okay, emergency, send for Vishnu. So Lord Vishnu, actually Lord Vishnu said you should talk to Shiva about this. And because, you know, everyone has their own particular field of expertise. So he said that's Lord Shiva's expert in that particular field. So then Lord Shiva just drank this ocean of poison. And the ocean of poison is described that his throat became blue as a result. Nila Kanta. Kanta means like the throat. Nila. Like Nila Madhava is the name of a deity of Krishna. That means bluish Krishna, bluish Madhava. So Lord Shiva got a bluish throat because he drank this ocean of poison. So he was able to deal. This is a typical thing that Prabhupada said. That he was able to deal with this ocean of poison. So Prabhupada said that if the followers, the so-called followers of Lord Shiva, want to take marijuana, they should be ready to drink an ocean of poison. Like that. And also Prabhupada said if the so-called followers of Lord Krishna, they want to dance with many women and break the principles, they should be ready to lift Govardhan Hill. Those are the two things that Prabhupada said. They should be able to establish their greatness to be able to deal with that particular scenario. I mean, according to how great someone is, they can deal with different scenarios and not be affected. Like I was just hearing from the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Ramananda Roy. Lord Chaitanya sent this devotee Prajuna Mishra to hear about Krishna from Ramananda Roy. So Prajuna Mishra arrives at Ramananda Roy's house, and he's told by Ramananda Roy's servant that Ramananda Roy is teaching the Devi Dasis how to dance. And as I mentioned in a previous class, in those days the ladies didn't dance publicly. They would just dance for the deities. Because if they danced publicly, you know, the men would be salivating. You know, looking at the young girls. Even if they were dancing a Krishna dance, you know, there's, like Prabhupada said, men are like butter and women are like fire. So then they would all become ghee. And not the type of ghee we can use in sacrifices. So, so Ramananda Roy was teaching the Devi Dasis how to dance, and he was bathing them, you know, young girls. He was bathing and everything like that. And Prajuna Mishra, he was, you know, a little confused by the whole thing. So he went back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked what was Ramananda Roy doing or what had happened at Ramananda Roy's house, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, actually, Ramananda Roy, he has this prerogative to do that. Nobody else. Lord Chaitanya said, you know, I think I'm a renounced sannyasi, but just like even hearing the name of the woman, my mind becomes confused or disturbed. So he said that Ramananda Roy is the only one who has that prerogative. And then he described why Ramananda Roy was able to do that. He said, because Ramananda Roy identifies or is fully absorbed in his spiritual identity as a gopi. You know, externally you may see a male form, but internally he's a gopi. You know, so that's, he's not at all identifying with the external form. Whereas we are 99, well, maybe 100% identifying with the external form. And maybe we think we'd like to identify with our internal form, which we don't even know what it is. So we're far removed from that position. So the point I'm making is that you have a great personality who has greater prerogatives to do things than just an ordinary personality. And what to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And it's also interesting comparing Krishna's various expansions and incarnations in that regard. Because we know Krishna is the origin of all the other incarnations. Ete Changsa, Kalakpumsa. What is it? Krishna's two, Bhagavan Swayam. So let's do this comparison. Let's take Lord Ramchandra, for example. We're talking about, like Prabhupada in the purport says, that sometimes Krishna performs acts not sanctioned by the Vedic principles. So, but Lord Ramchandra never did that. It's quite interesting. But this specific statement that Prabhupada makes is only in reference to the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and Vrindavan. Because Lord Ramchandra was so Vedic. I mean, so much sticking to Vedic principle and promises. I mean, just think about it. He promised Sita Devi, you know, Ekapatni Vrata, only one wife. And even though, you know, there was so much opportunity, even that beautiful girl Surpanaka came around. You know, who could resist her? Anyway, I'm just being a little facetious. But anyway, I mean, he had so much, as the king, he had so much opportunity in many different ways to enjoy. He had the opportunity. He didn't have to listen to his father when his father said, Dasaras said, because of Kaikeyi's injunction, that you should go to the forest and done the Kauranya forest for 14 years. He didn't have to listen. Actually, Lakshman said, rebel against your father. Put him in jail or something. The old man is under the control of this witch. You know, Kaikeyi. I mean, she was acting like a witch. It was a pastime. I understand that. But he said, the old man has just become, you know, under the control of this Kaikeyi. He said, just rebel. You don't have to listen to him. But what did Lord Ram do? He listened to his father. And he followed, and not so strictly, he followed his father's injunction that even when he was in the woods, let's say when he helped Sugriva conquer over his brother Bali, and they were going to have the coronation of Sugriva in Kishkinda, he refused to enter into the city there. Could you imagine that? I mean, he had taken a vow of vanaprastha. That vanaprastha means to go to the forest. But he was so dutiful that he would not even enter into the monkey city. I mean, not even New York we're talking about here. Or Ayodhya. Oh, you need some more volume. Okay. Increase the volume. We are in control of the volume. We're in control of the horizontal and the vertical. You remember that TV show? No, you don't. The outer limits. Anyways, so, okay. So getting back to the point. So Lord Ram would not even enter into Kishkinda because he had taken that, made that promise. You know, just see how dharmic and Vedic Lord Ram was, you know, sticking to every promise he made, sending his beloved wife away because the king's duty is to consider the citizens his family just as much as his other family, you know, just as much as the blood family or the wife or the children. I mean, his pregnant wife away, I mean, and suffering because of that. So you don't find a single instance in Lord Ram's pastimes, where, like Prabhupada says here, that that he kills demons, that performs acts not sanctioned by the Vedic principles, performs acts not sanctioned by the... You don't find one instance of that. You don't find one instance of that in any incarnation of the Lord. I mean, sometimes they're a little tricky, that's true. I mean, like the story, getting back to the story of... when the demons and the demigods were churning the ocean of milk and the nectar came out, the demons stole the nectar, and then Krishna just like became the most beautiful girl, and the demons fainted in ecstasy and turned over the nectar to the beautiful girl, Mohini Murti. But that's not a violation of the regulated principles. I mean, there's no Vedic principle. The demons just became enamored. That's normal. That's normal. You know, if Krishna appears a beautiful lady, what do you expect? So, so you don't find in any incarnation of Krishna violating the regulated principles. He doesn't do that. He doesn't act above or beyond the Vedic norms. Of course, he shows that he's God. I mean, he does things that are a violation of, let us say, of ordinary rules and regulations in the material world, like not the regulations so forth, but let's say the like laws of gravity, or, you know, genetics and things like that. That, you know, that Krishna acts transcendentally, like when he became Lord Matsya, how he grew so fast. I mean, no fish in the world grows as fast as that, right? I mean, one moment he was like in a little bit, load up, the next minute in a well, the next minute in a lake, and the next minute in the ocean. You know, so he's a super grow food or something like that. So, but as far as the Vedic injunctions, he never violated Vedic injunctions. So let's take Krishna in Vrindavan. And Krishna, I mean, just like, can you imagine what an example he sets? You know, Krishna is dancing with so-called other people's wives in the middle of the night. Krishna is disobeying his mother's instructions, you know, sneaking out at night. stealing things. I mean, when did Lord Ramchandra ever steal butter? Or when did Lord Ramchandra ever pinch babies and pass urine on other people's floors? Where did Lord Ramchandra ever have affairs with different women? I mean, you just don't see that. You don't see that happening. Whereas Krishna does that. I mean, at least externally, it appears like that, let's say. And that'll give you an internal reason. But anyway, he does that. He's dancing with so many gopis in the middle of the night, sneaks back at home right before his mother's going to check in his bedroom. And sometimes, you know, he's having such a good time that he switches clothes with Radharani, and so he wakes up and, you know, he basically has a blue cloth on him. And Radharani wakes up at her house, and she has a golden cloth because she has Krishna's cloth. I mean, they're sneaking, you know, playing tricks on Radharani's mother-in-law and her sister-in-law, Jatila and Kutila. I mean, you know, really bad example we have here with Krishna. However, I'll explain why he's not actually breaking the injunction. So another, you know, externally it may appear so. Because all the ladies, first of all, he was married to all of them before they so-called got married to their other husbands. How was that? That was that Katyayani Vrat. When the Katyayani Vrat was performed, and girls would perform the Katyayani Vrat, it means take a vow to worship Lord Durga, but also Lord Shiva at the same time, to worship Durga for a certain period of time, bathing in the cold Jamuna River. And so when that Katyayani Vrat was over, the day was over, they went to perform their final snan in the river, final bath in the river. And who was there stealing their clothes but Krishna? So Krishna stole their clothes. He was up in the tree, told them, you got to come out and get your own clothes, and you got to, don't try to cover your bodies with your hair, don't try to cover your bodies with your hands, just hold your hands over your head, you know, like, this is stick up, you know. Like, you understand? Like, this is stick up, hands up. Like the police, I've never been stopped by the police, but sometimes they ask you to put your hands up or hands on your car, face down. You know, so Krishna was like, put your hands on your head. It's the same thing as a stick up. Put your hands on your head and come out and bow down, lady. So in this way, because you've committed, Krishna was joking with him, you committed a great offense against the river by bathing naked. So by that particular, right after they performed the Katyayani Vrat, by that particular act of coming out and Krishna seeing them in that way, that was in essence the marriage. So in other words, they were all married to Krishna. And another point is, ontologically, everyone belongs to Krishna. If you think that you belong to someone else, you know, I'm yours and you're mine, forever and ever, you know, that's why we join the Mormon religion. So you can have an eternal marriage to someone, God. That's a torture. Anyway, so from Sannyasa's perspective. So you're not belonging to anyone else but Krishna. And you don't own anybody or own anything. Krishna owns everything. You know, Krishna's the owner. Isha Bhasham Idam Sarvam Niyakincha Jagacham Jagat Chaina Takchaina Bunjata Magradha Kashyasvid Dhanam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone is given a quota. That means something to use. They're lent something by Krishna. So, therefore, they all belong to Krishna anyway. And they were all his expansions. You know, it's just like, you know, I may lend you my computer, but it's my computer. I have every right to use it. Just using my favorite example. Computer example. But I have every right to use the computer. It's mine. I can take it back from any damn time I want. Because it belongs to me. You understand? So, and the gopis' husbands never even touched them. never even went near them. I mean, they were, I guess they were quite frustrated. But there are expansions of Krishna, the gopis' husbands, you know, too. So that's another point. But they never went near their wives. I mean, even Abhimanyu, Radharani's so-called husband, was making plans, trying to bring jewelry to her to try to buy her off. You know, a man is thinking, diamond is a girl's best friend, right? You ever heard that before? You should learn that, Mahabharata. Diamond is a girl's... No one's heard that before. You've heard that. So he was bringing all these diamonds and jewels in a box. But little did he know that Krishna had snuck in the box and taken all the diamonds and jewels out. So even in his attempt to bribe his wife, he was bringing Krishna to his wife. So, you know, so pretty unsuccessful guy in his romantic endeavors. So... this was in Yavat. Yeah, Yavat was where Radharani, Jutila, and Gutila lived, and Abhimanyu. So therefore, you know, because everything belongs to Krishna, Krishna has the right to use anything he wants in any way. And, this establishes his ontological position, his superiority, his... godliness. This is actually God, that he can do anything he wants. I mean, Krishna, that's why we say when Krishna appears in Vrindavan, he really shows what God is. I mean, it's one thing to be the, you know, all the O's, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, and all those things. But it's another thing to be swarat, or independent, meaning he can do any damn thing he wants at any damn time, and he doesn't have to follow any rules and regulations. That's really what it means to be God. Independent. You know, the Westerners, Western religion theologians, they generally define God as in with the O words. You know, God is all-pervading, all good. I forgot about that one. Sometimes I always forget that one because what God does. But anyway, God is all good, all-knowing, all-present, all-powerful. Those are the omni words. So... but even beyond that, God is independent, swarat. And that's brought out in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. He's independent. He can do anything he wants. He's not under anyone's jurisdiction. You can't, or you can accuse him, but, you know, it doesn't make any difference. So that's Krishna, and that's wonderful, because he's always engaged in lila, or pastimes, which means he's playful, does anything he wants. And that's the most adorable aspect or appearance or manifestation of God. That means God who does anything he wants, anytime he wants, with anyone he wants, with anything he wants. And tough luck on you, whether you like it or not. You understand? So Krishna is like that, Krishna. So any questions or comments? We got about 1 minute. Yeah.
Requires for us to understand Krishna's pastimes, and I was trying to put that against following the rules and regulations the Pancharatra did. And somehow I was thinking that the reason for those, like, those seem really constricted.
Yeah.
Yet when we have a relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world, that's very unrestricted, so that is part of that doing the duties and the regs to understand that we're actually not controlling the
servants. Yeah, well, to actually understand that we're servants. To actually understand that we're servants. That's the purpose of Pancharatra Gavidi, is to put us in the mode of goodness. You know, waking up early, like we were talking about the other day, Pancharatra Gavidi, puts you in the mode of goodness. It's essential, and what we're talking about, the Vrindavan pastimes and everything like that, that's all Bhagavad Vidhi stuff. You know, and the worship of the residents of Vrindavan is not Pancharatra Gavidi at all. It's all Bhagavad Vidhi. You know, it's all spontaneous. The worship of Govardhan is like that. It's all spontaneous. It's not like rules and regulations. It's more like, you know, give and take, like a give and take spontaneity. So, but Pancharatra Gavidi is absolutely essential. Deity worship is essential because it reminds us that God is a person. Right now, we're on a different position. We're in a different position. You know, we're generally thinking of ourselves being the center. And, it's hard for us to visualize Krishna. So Krishna appears as a deity, so we can visualize him, understand that we're his servants. I mean, there's psychological, spiritual aspects to Pancharatra Kiviti, and there's modal aspects. Modal means the mode of goodness. So we have to be established in the mode of goodness. I mean, without Pancharatra Kiviti, we would not be waking up early in the morning. You know, we'd be waking up at 8 o'clock, rubbing our eyes, chanting our japa. But, our mind would not be able to be focused because we wouldn't be in the mode of goodness. I mean, a pure devotee, of course, he can wake up at any time. Like we said, the higher the position someone has, the more prerogative they have to act, let's say, in a not-so-strict way. Like Ramananda Roy, we were giving that example. The higher elevation, but as far as ourselves are concerned, we should be humble and understand we're right on the ground level. And we should be afraid of my